Welcome to Conscious Convos. This podcast is a space for conversations that inspire us towards better understanding and achieving spiritual growth. We do that by inviting different guests from all over the world to share their unique journeys, insights, and practical advice on how to live a more elevated and conscious life. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of the Conscious Convos podcast. This is episode 18 titled A Spiritual Awakening with Roland Achinjung. And in this episode, we have a sit down with Roland, who is the author of a book called Who and Why You Are. Roland tells us the story of an event that changed his life and led him to a state of spiritual awakening. We discuss many things in this episode, including but not limited to how Roland perceives everything as consciousness experiencing itself. He talks about the importance of remembering who we are, which is Roland's passion in life. We talk about how he got into meditation and teaching it. We talk about the process in which he authored his book and the content of his book, which is called Who and Why You Are. And also towards the end, we discuss one of my favorite topics, that is the work of Dr. Hawkins, The Map of Consciousness. So a lot was covered in less than an hour. Hope you enjoy this episode. And as usual, if you like it, please share it with whoever you think would be interested in such topics. And let's get to it. Enjoy episode 18 with Roland Achinjung. So hello again, Roland, and hello to everyone. This is episode 18 of Conscious Convos. So today we have with us Roland Achinjung. Thank you very much, Roland, for being here today. As we were talking before the podcast, I've been following you on Instagram for about 2 years. And then we had Randy Weitenheimer, that is a common friend, and he recommended to have you on the show as well. So we're probably going to get into that at some point. But Roland, I know that you have been teaching meditation for a few years now. You also authored a book called, or the website or the podcast is Remember Who You Are. Is that the title of the book as well?
No, it's very close though. The title of the book is Who and Why You Are.
Okay.
All You Need to Remember.
Okay.
Yeah. So similar ideas. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get into teaching meditation and then authoring a book? I mean, tell us your story.
Of course. First of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And shout out to Randy for recommending me. He really is a good friend. Randy and I joke about this, and I do too. Like when you want to tell somebody a story about how you ended up where you are, you know, like how you and I are now recording this, if I were to tell you, it would take as long as I have been alive up to now. And but we end up just shortening it and saying, well, sometime at this time, I started doing this and this happened, which is essentially what I'm going to do next. Right. But it really took a turn in 2013. Before that, ever since I was 8 years old, and you can relate to this, I was always curious about what more there is to life and to being human and what happens after death. And I also grew up in a country where things like witchcraft were part of the conversation regularly. And I never understood what witchcraft was or where those people got these, quote unquote, their powers or their knowledge to practice that kind of activity. And then I was also raised in a, you know, traditional, very conservative religion. And if you couple that with, you know, being exposed to witchcraft and then going to school, by the time I started working professionally as a healthcare professional, I am a pharmacist, right? I began to notice that my life and the experiences I was having weren't properly reflecting what my beliefs were, in that things I was taught in my religious upbringing, I wasn't seeing that in the real world. It wasn't translating. And essentially, I was what you would call confused, right? Just confused. And then you add on the politics of the workplace that they don't teach you in school. That just made me feel even more confused. And then you add on the fact that I wanted to do so much more and contribute to the profession that I am in. And so I had decided to go back to business school to get a business degree on top of the pharmacy degree that I had. Now, to do this, I had to shift my working schedule to where I would work the overnight shift at the hospital, a large hospital in Midtown, Nashville, Tennessee.
Right.
And yeah. And I would basically go to class at 6 p.m. And then leave class around 8:50 to be at work by 9 p.m. And then I would work all night until 8 a.m. the next morning. And then I would leave and go to bed, and I would be in bed by 9 a.m. and sleep until about 5 p.m. and then get up and do the same thing all over again. And so I was basically living a life that was opposite of daylight. I was only awake in the evenings and overnight. This went on for 2+ years, almost 3 years, really. And I had become so accustomed to just, you know, being by myself, being really sad, being really depressed, being really stressed about work and trying to meet the demands of being a student. And I barely saw the sunlight. Like the only time I would see the sun is when I would leave work and then walk home because I live pretty close to work. Yeah. And then I missed a lot of family events. And I felt at the time clinically depressed. And then my life just seemed like a gray world. Something I wasn't used to. Being a pharmacist, I'm also skeptical about medicine, which is kind of funny. And so in trying to find a way to cope and get out of this quote unquote gray world, I sort of landed on this idea that my body is a magnificent healing machine. And if I just gave it the space and time to heal itself, it would tell me what it needed. And I decided I would do that. I would lay in my bed and listen to my body. It was kind of odd because the first time I did it, Mohammed, I felt guilty because if you think about you and I and everybody who's watching this podcast, you always have access to your body, but most of the time you're not paying attention to how it's working or what it's doing. You're ignoring it until you get sick or you get hurt, and then you start to pay attention. That was one of the biggest realizations at the start of this journey. It was just, whoa, I've always had this body. Like wherever I am, my body is there with me. And I just ignored it. If it was healthy, I was like, fine, let's go do this. Let's go do this. There was never the need to sit down and just appreciate the magnificence of this machine that we can't replicate. And even in healthcare, we've been studying for as long as society has started to study the body to heal. And we still don't fully understand how it works. And we continue to specialize. You have heart specialists and eye specialists. And we're still like, we don't fully know how this thing works.
Yep.
So on that fateful, it was a Wednesday morning. I lay in my bed. My apartment was all blacked out because I was sleeping during the day. So I had blackout curtains. It was pure, just pitch black. And I sit on the edge of my bed to meditate and promptly fall asleep from exhaustion. Nothing unusual or magnificent happened. But shortly after that, right, I wake up around 5 p.m., not shortly, like later in the day at 5 p.m., I wake up and I'm laying in my bed and I think, oh, let me just do this again for a little while. And so as I start, my eyes are closed. It's still dark in my apartment. I start seeing lights twirling in my like third eye area. So at this point in time, I have no idea what a third eye is. Okay. Right. I'd never been exposed to that, not in pharmacy school. We certainly weren't learning that in business school. And my Catholic upbringing never talked about chakras. I'm laying in my bed and I see this hypnotic, very soothing light just turning in my third eye like a lava lamp right there. And I'm just watching it. And then it dawns on me, Mohammed, that my eyes are closed. My apartment is pitch black. I'm the only one in there. I should not be seeing this. And right. So I freak out. I stop. I open my eyes and it's dark. I turn the light on and my heart rate is like beating out of my chest. I'm panting and worried that literally I have been possessed by the devil because I should not be able to do this. This is not normal. This is not things that happen. And I literally am freaking out. I'm walking around my apartment, seeing if there's anybody else there. All the lights are on. And then a little while later, I calm down when I realize I'm just there by myself. And yes, my eyes were closed. And yes, I was seeing this hypnotic lights. Then I take a shower and I go to class. Now, at that time, in class, I was very alert. I could really pay attention to what the teacher was saying. And I could, for like the first time in so long, understand what was going on. Not that I didn't understand, but this was just a new level of understanding about the topics we were discussing.
Clarity, yeah.
Yeah. And I got to thinking, but why is this happening to me today? Oh, guess what? I laid in my bed, listened to my body, and freaked out because I saw lights in my third eye. Even though it freaked me out, I'm going to go back to it again. Right? I said, I'm going to try this again. I mean, the way I'm feeling right now does not make sense to just experience that by not taking medicine, none of that, by not exercising. I should go back and try this. And yeah, that was my experience, Mohammed. So I went back and I would do this sitting down in my bed or laying in my bed and listening to my body, which is really meditating. But again, I had no idea I was meditating. And I would allow these weird things to happen for an extended period of time. It would get to a point where I just couldn't take it anymore because it was too much. Just like the eyes, or when I realize like what's going on, why am I breathing differently? Why am I just sweating? Why are my eyes burning? Like those kinds of weird things. Then I would stop and freak out and then calm down and then go online and research and find out on YouTube. There were many people putting videos on YouTube about like Kundalini awakening or spiritual awakening. These were all new words and terms for me. But the symptoms that they were describing were similar to what I was going through. And so even though I was afraid of confirmation bias, that is, I was self-diagnosing, I was noticing that the same things these people were going through is what was happening to me, right? As energy was coursing through my body and releasing blockages and helping me heal, I was having this weird physical experiences, but I was gaining more and more clarity.
But, you know, Roland, a lot of people meditate and they don't go through these kinds of experiences. And many people, they actually, the ones that don't like to meditate is because they're very impatient just to sit down and observe their bodies or their thoughts. Why do you think these things happen to you? And for many, and they happen to you and they happen to many other people as well, but some people, they meditate and they never experience anything beyond just the normal, you know, relaxation effect and the calming down. What do you think was different about your experience?
Well, you raise a good point, Mohammed. I mean, what was different and super unique about my experience is that for the first 28 years of my life, I was never exposed to meditation. And I was raised in West Africa, in Cameroon, where meditation is like a taboo. Like we're raised either Catholic or Muslim. Those are the two main religions. Well, I should say you're either Christian or Muslim. Those are like the two main tracks. And so the idea of like sitting down and meditating, whether in the lotus position or just sitting upright, was so foreign to me. That was more like Eastern traditional Indian behavior. Where to us, if you were actually partaking in that, it was a taboo. Now, it was never my intention, honestly, that I would sit and meditate and in this sort of spiritual awakening. The primary reason why I got in my bed and decided to listen to my body was because I was so stressed and like clinically depressed, and I just wanted to listen to it.
Right.
Now, you're right that it's unusual, again, that happened to me, but as I've continued to meet with people and talk with people and share my experiences, my best explanation, and I've not confirmed this with any of my higher guides or anything, is that in previous lives, which is another kind of belief that changed throughout this process, that I've been on this planet many times and on other planets, but in previous lives, I had begun this work, right? Because it really doesn't make sense to come in with that natural ability that I have, and just be able to jump in and not only start to experience this sort of unusual things, but also enjoy the calming effect that most people think meditation is only about, right? To relieve anxiety and calm down. It's way more. It's really the source of everything, right? Because when you quiet and you quiet yourself and you open your mind to meditating, you're receiving information about everything. And that's where Tai Chi comes from. That's where yoga comes from. That's where breath work comes from. That's where knowledge about science comes from. So that I'm able to do this, I feel in a previous life, I spent a lot of time meditating and exploring these practices. And then I brought that with me in this current incarnation. And it's now helping me with the work that I'm doing today.
Right. Okay. So that was in 2013, right? When you had that experience. And then you kept meditating just consistently after that. And whatever experiences you were having, you were Googling them and seeing what is the explanation for that. And at what point did you think that, okay, meditation is something I want to teach other people?
Oh, great point. This was really in 2018 that this happened. So in 2018, this was 4 or 5 years after I had started this meditation, I had a Kundalini awakening, a spiritual awakening. And it was a very fascinating experience. On a Tuesday morning, I get up to go to work. But before I could go to work, I got this deep insight, just knowledge and basically a direction, which was don't do anything. Go right now and meditate. Don't do anything first. Don't brush your teeth. Don't even take a shower. Just go meditate right now. It's something magnificent is going to happen. Now, prior months to that day, I would sit to meditate and I would go through all these yoga poses and try to adopt the boat pose. But it was a variation where I would sit in the boat pose and I would use my fingers to grab onto my big toe and then sit kind of like a triangle, you know. But I swear for months, Mohammed, I couldn't do it. My body was not strong enough and I wasn't centered enough to do it. So every time I would stretch my legs up and then try to grab on, I would hold for a little bit and I would fall over. Right. And this just kept going on. I would keep going back to this pose every time. It's just don't stop, go back. But on this morning, I get up, I get that message, I go to meditate, I lift up and I hold on and I can hold it. And as soon as I do, I felt this like pop, the base of my spine, and like the energy just rising up my spine to my head. And then when it reached my head, my head was like this, I went like this. And then the first time, there was just this remembering, right? That's why I use the word remember so much. Right. I just remembered. I remembered like, oh, wait, that's who I am. That's why I'm here. And then another one came, poof, then my head jerked back again. Then I remembered even more and it started to fit into this framework that just made sense about our reality. Then a third one came and it just expanded this knowing and remembering about who I am, my relationship to everyone and everything, and who the creator is and what we're doing here on earth. At that point, the energy was so strong for me, I could not hold on. And in hindsight, I was thinking, I wish I could have, because if it were seven, it would have been all seven chakras. But this was like the first three. And I remembered so much about what I'm doing here as a human being and how it relates to everybody. And then I let go. At this point, I'm crying and I'm laughing and there's tears running down my eyes. I run upstairs and I open my backyard door and I see consciousness everywhere in my backyard. Like my car is alive and it's telling me that my car is me, just expressed in a unique form. And then other cars are driving on the streets and they're telling me the same thing. They're just right. Like, huh?
Mm.
And the grass is doing the same thing. And I kid you not, I look up in the sky and the clouds and the skies, the same thing. They're like, dude, we're just you playing a different role.
Mm.
And then this was like so fascinating. I see this gust of wind literally coming from my right side. And then it smacks my face and forces me to turn to my left. And I see it just go and hit some trees and like shake them and then keep going. And I'm like, the wind is alive and it's talking to me. And it's just fascinating. And for the week, that entire week of August 21st, 2018, I was on like a high where I was too happy to function. Everything was magnificent. Mm. Everything was the creator. Everything, this microphone. And I cannot unsee it. Just, oh my God. And I was now fascinated by the minute shares of details. Like, how did this comb become to be? Oh, it was a tree that was rubber that got extracted. And it's just the creator. It's now experiencing life in a new form. So when that happened, I decided to write my book to kind of describe who we are and a little bit about, you know, why we are, to help you calm down, because it made me feel like I shouldn't worry about anything, right? Like deep down, there is no need to worry about anything. It's all a make-believe show that we're having here on planet Earth. It's temporary to help us remember that we're having a make-believe show here on Earth, which is temporary.
Right.
And because I remembered this, I felt like the butt to the best joke ever told, right? Where I got tricked, right? That was the feeling, is I believed that this is real. I believed that suffering was, you know, real. And I believed that you could kind of like do bad things and end up in hell. But all of this just went to show like, no, it's just part of the design. We made you believe these things so that you would act a certain way and you would learn from it. And then eventually you would see that, oh, it was all make-believe. And you would review and see how did you do when you thought X, Y, and Z would result in this. And duh, why do you think with those beliefs, your life is not always turning out the way you think it would? Because we're constantly changing it so that you learn bigger and bigger lessons to expand your consciousness, right? Which kind of alludes to what I was saying in the beginning, that my life was not translating the way I believed it would. Like if I do A, B would happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here I am feeling very relieved, just crying, just happy, feeling like I don't, you know, kind of in this state of bliss that is honestly not sustainable, because it's because it's just so much joy. And like, it's, you can't really function like that. I couldn't. Not at that state. It just was a glimpse like, hey, you can get to this state and you can sustain it. We've shown you, but not yet. You still have work to do. So the week ended and I have all this knowledge. So I write the book and I start talking to people. And when I'm talking to people, they kept asking me, how did I come about this information? And I said, I was meditating. And they go, oh, I can't meditate. What do you mean by you're meditating? And that right there was a huge opportunity for me to realize, holy crap, meditating is this free practice with tremendous benefits that people don't believe they can do it, when all you need is the ability to breathe, the ability to think, the ability to feel. Like, you just have to be human and you can meditate. That's how I started teaching meditation.
And were you able to replicate that experience again, the Kundalini experience, since then?
Yes and no. So this is one of those classic things with people who are meditating on a spiritual path. And it's a good point here, right? Is when you have an experience like this, you want to replicate it. But the universe never replicates things, right? So today will never be. This moment will never be again. It's going to evolve. If you and I have another podcast conversation, it'll be at a different time and space. You get it? You're not going to replicate.
Sure.
And so even I felt trapped to that, where I said, oh, I want to meditate to have that spiritual awakening again. But I didn't need to, because in a way, I'd be trying to go back to where and who I used to be. I need to start from today. I know I've had this experience. So any experience I have beginning today, whether it's as magnificent as that, holds that same magnificence.
Yes.
It may not show up that way, but it's already there. So
yeah,
to say there. But I did. I did go to Rythmia Life Advancement Center. It's a healing facility in Costa Rica. And I partook in plant medicine. And the reason I went there was kind of unusual. So this awakening happened in 2018. And September, like the first weekend of September, I'd written down like basically the full draft, my entire book. And then through October and November, I kept going back and editing it, making it, you know, flesh it out, etc. Then by December, I had spent so many hours with my book and the words that I became sort of jaded with it. And I really became like a classic human, where I started to doubt myself, whether the experience I had was legitimate. Partly also because I could not replicate it. Like I had not had the awakening anymore. See? And so now in my genius mind, this is my ego really working. I said, let me go to plant medicine. Let me go take plant medicine in a, in a, you know, spiritual ceremony and see what happens. If I can get more information to confirm that this knowledge is true, because after it happened, I started to see it everywhere, like in The Power of Now and in the book, The Secret, and deeper and deeper versions. And then in like ancient religions, like the Bhagavad Gita, I was like, oh, this is, this is so true. This has been here the whole time, but I couldn't recognize it or see it in the way I now was seeing it. So I went to take plant medicine in Costa Rica as a 4-night experience. And I did have another really full blown awakening. Like all chakras opened up. This was more magnificent. This was super different. And then I, when I came back from that, I was able to work on my book. And you know, I was, I was really naive. After I had my awakening and I wrote my book, this was, so I have the awakening in August. I write the entire first draft in September, and I think I can edit it and publish it by December. And then I'm like, everyone's going to read it and everyone's going to feel calm the way I do. And they're just going to relax for a bit. But as life has, life would have it, right? Things are constantly changing. So by December, I got all this new information. And then in January, I started re-editing the book. And I did not publish it again until August 21st the following year. So it took a whole year to write and edit.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned plant medicine, because when you were describing your experience while meditating, and then everything was conscious when you went outside, the car, the trees, the wind, everything. That sounds like experiences people have when they're on plant medicine. So it's amazing that it's possible to get to a stage like that just through meditation. And I agree with you that it's not the right thing to do to try to replicate it, because the first time it happened, you weren't even trying to make it happen. You were just meditating and it happened, probably to teach you something. And then that thing, the information had arrived to you. So then you try to replicate it again. There's no need, because what you got, you already received. What you needed to receive, you already received in the first time. So the second experience isn't going to happen when you want it to happen. It'll happen, if it does, whenever the flow of the universe decides that it's the right time for it to happen. So yeah, it's super interesting. So okay, going to the meditation itself, what you practice and what you teach, is it a specific type of meditation? Because there's so many types out there. Is it your own brand that you just, you know, came up over time that works for you? Or what do you teach exactly?
Yeah, that's a good point. So what I teach is, I guess you could call it my own brand. I've not branded it, or I don't have a name for it, but it's a meditation that helps you. ultimately remember who you are just by paying attention to who you are. It's a meditation that takes advantage of what it means to be human. And this was one of the confirming messages I had through the plant medicine ceremony, right? Because during the ceremony, what I realized is I had gone out of myself again, because I didn't believe that I could receive this information. I had gone out of myself. But the medicine basically showed me, like, you don't need to. No one needs to. Now, here's why, at least the way the medicine explained it to me. It's when you showed up on this planet, right? When you, quote unquote, regardless of how you believe you ended up here, but when you came here, whether you had signed a contract with your creator that you're going to come and do certain things, you came here with only your physical body and your ability to breathe and your ability to sense, right? Taste, smell, see, to varying degrees.
Right.
And you came here and you saw all of these things that were already available on the planet, whether it was plant medicine, whether it was computers, whether it was light, like all of these things were already there. But think about how magnificent the sort of the conversation you had before you showed up could have gone. And just this notion that whoever sent you here was like, hey, you don't need to go with anything. Just remember what you showed up with and use that to navigate. Like, there was this trust that your physical body holds all the information you're going to ever need. If it doesn't, it has access to all the information you're ever going to need. You can play around. You can do plant medicine. You can do peyote. You can be a Catholic and you can take Holy Communion. You can drink the wine that's been consecrated and is now the blood of Jesus Christ. You can do all of these things. But the guarantee is every one of those paths is going to reach a limit that will eventually push you back to go within. Like, it always does. Everything. If you look at your entire life, you've always tried something and then you're like, ah, that's not good. That's not enough. Oh, that's not enough. And you can. Outside of you, there's an infinite number of things you can try. So there is within you. And the one thing you can always rely on having, regardless of where you are, is yourself. I'm not always going to have access to plant medicine. I'm not always going to have access to traditional Western medicine like Tylenol or whatever the case. Depending on where I am always there with myself, with my mind, with my feelings, with my body. And if I'm able to use this as an instrument to heal, which is what we're ultimately doing with every relationship we're having, we're healing, we're getting to know ourselves better, we're defining ourselves, and we're showing up as that new knowing of who we are. Then you are like on an awesome path where you're becoming this sort of, self-realized sovereign being where, you know, if you have a question, you can always go back to your center, your truth.
Right.
Everything else is a tool to help you and basically remind you to always go back. And that was that was one of the big messages was, hey, go back. Even when it's tough, even when you don't get the experience that you want, go back, right? You can dabble out. You can incorporate different things, mala beads, binaural beads, sounds.
Yeah.
But you realize you don't need them. And it's true. I mean, just to share, like, some of the interesting experiences I've had just by meditating is access to some of the most glorious sounds of rainfall and waterfall. And some of the most vivid colors and images of cartoon characters and just thunder and light and astrotra, like going to other planets. Like, you have all these experiences. They're legitimate. They're real. I've had them. But this was not by taking any external sort of plant or anything. This was just purely meditating. And you realize you could get lost in it too.
I mean, our body's capable of doing amazing things. And I think if anybody is skeptical about this, just think about what happens when you go to sleep and when you have dreams. The dreams they're not created by any pill that you take or any plant. They're just there as a creation of your consciousness somehow. I don't know what your brain is doing, but amazing things happen inside a dream, right? And we didn't even talk about lucid dreaming is when you actually start to have control over your dream and you start to do whatever you want. And then there's amazing things going on. All of that is without any external object or external factor causing it. It's all you. So if that can happen when you're asleep, why can't it happen when you're awake meditating, right? Something, you know, these amazing experiences can happen as well, because the mind and by extension reality, because reality is all a creation of the mind, is way deeper and way more intricate than we know. I think we're just on, with everything we know, I think we're on the surface still. Meditating is definitely a way to go deeper and to explore what's going on beneath the surface. So it's just a thing for if someone's skeptical, like, how can that happen when you're just meditating, closing your eyes? Well, it happens to people every night when they sleep, so it can happen when you're meditating as well. It's just a side note that I thought of. So basically, Roland, the book, what you're talking about right now, is that what's in the book? Like, are you explaining your conclusions of what you've arrived at from your journeys in the book? Is that what it's about, or is it something different?
Yeah, this is the book you're talking about.
That's it.
Who and Why You Are, All You Need to Remember.
Okay.
You can get this anywhere. Amazon, through my website. I could ship autographed copies within the continental United States.
Have you made an audio version yet?
Yes, there's the audio version on Audible and
Okay.
Actually, multiple, wherever you can listen to Audible books. Yeah, you should be able to find it. Right. If you can't, let me know. But the book is a little bit of my story, but it's more so the deep universal spiritual beliefs that at the time I understood apply to everybody, explaining why we are here on Earth and why the Earth life experience is the way it is, and how the work we're doing, whether we think it's right or wrong or good or bad, just by showing up in the world every day and like you are right now, recording this podcast with me, is contributing to like this database of information, which is allowing the source of everything to know itself better and then answer the question, so what? So in effect, it could be a very detailed question with like an infinite number of variables. If my name were Mohammed Armous and I lived in Dubai and it was 6 p.m., and I decided to have a conversation with Roland on a podcast on a day when I couldn't be in the room I wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. And maybe the sun was shining and I had the ability to put a different background. I had a mustache on and Roland had a beard and there was a plant behind him and he had lights in his place and he was in contact. Like all of these variables, the question would be, if all of these are going on and then all these other things are happening in the world, what would Roland and Mohammed create? And let's watch. And then when we create it, they take all that information and they go, okay, so this is what they did. So let's change it. So they change it. It's a different day. It's a different time. It's Mohammed and a different person with a different conversation. And Roland is doing something else. Randy is doing something else. What would they create? And what would Randy create? And you can see just by that it never ends. You're just constantly, like exhaustively asking, well, I know all of this, so what? What else can I know? What does it mean? How will you react differently? What if Roland had a headache? What if Roland did not meditate for 45 minutes this morning before this conversation? How would he sound? How would Mohammed sound? What if Roland never responded? What if Mohammed never reached out to her? Like, it never ends. And so the book describes, in my understanding at the time, how we are, you know, supporting consciousness know itself in that regard. Yeah.
Right.
And then okay. at the end, okay. at the end, there's some meditations. But for more like guided meditations, more information about meditation, you like more current information about that. My website houses all of that stuff.
All right. Very cool. Awesome. And I'm glad there's an audio version, because honestly, I haven't read a physical book in years. I think the last maybe 40 books I read were in audio format because I just enjoy, first, I enjoy listening, I think, more than reading. And it's just so much easier because I like to walk around and on my way to work, on the way back, in the car, whatever, I just listen. So that's how I consume most books. So I'm glad it's there in audio format, and I'll definitely check it out. You got me really curious. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is well, you mentioned Randy. We were talking about Randy in the beginning, and you have I think a 5-part series on your podcast. Is it 4 or 5 parts, or maybe 6? I don't know. With Randy going deep into Dr. Hawkins' teachings on the levels of consciousness. So tell me, first of all, how did you come across Dr. Hawkins' work, the levels of consciousness, and what impact did it have on your life to learn it?
I came across that information through Randy. So I've known Randy a long time. He and I have about, Jesus. If you add this map of consciousness conversation series is going to end up being maybe 7 or 8 total episodes. We have the 6th one recorded. I've just not posted it yet. While you're watching this video, maybe I'll have posted it. but prior to that, I had spent probably over, you know, I would say 15 to 20, like an entire day with Randy, more than actually just talking with him. And we had way many other podcasts that they're not currently available to the public because I took all those conversations down. But I should repost them again because they were fascinating. And it was during that time, like for an entire year after publishing my book in 2019 and all of 2020, Randy and I recorded, you know, many podcasts speaking about things similar to the book and things that he discussed on his show, The Quantum Effect on Gaia.
Yeah.
And he does this to everybody. He says, hey, you should read Power versus Force because, like he says, it establishes a commonality of language for you and I to communicate, which is great. I mean, I have my gripes, but language is such a beautiful technology, but it's like magnificent in that you and I can even communicate in English, right? Just because of context, etc. But in reading the book, it touched me as here is another person who has tapped into this spiritual knowledge and is bringing it in a form that reflects what his programming has been as a human. So he was a doctor of psychology, right? He was a psychologist, I believe, or a psychiatrist, one of the two. You can see that Dr. David Hawkins's work comes through with that knowing of what it means to be ashamed, to feel courage, to reason, right? Like he uses these words that are very, we use them every day, but he uses it to describe how if you have an expanded level of consciousness, then you can reach a certain level of the way you experience life that describes that you are here. Not to say you're always going to be there. You're going to shift, but you can always shift back up. It's like, if you know how good you can feel up here, when you come down, you're like, oh, I know I've been better than this. So it's easy for me to go back. When I write my book, I take my conditioning, which is being a pharmacist and a conservative Catholic Christian at the time, to describe what this expanded knowledge is helping me see about the illusions of life. And then if you read it and you had similar backgrounds, then it can make sense to you. So that information that Dr. David Hawkinson's put out in his book, it supported the information I had tapped into. And in reading it, I could see the same sort of DNA in it, the same fabric. Like, oh yeah, of course. This is what a spiritual awakening looks like, right? When you're going through all these levels. And you can juxtapose that on Maslow's hierarchy of need, on information you read from the Bhagavad Gita, on information you read from Power Versus Now. Like, all these spiritual books are telling you the same things, but just seasoning it differently.
Right.
It's like salt, pepper. So, but I liked it again because we all go through those emotions. We go through shame, we go through guilt, we go through courage, we go through neutrality. And there were some like some very significant levels of consciousness that I gravitated to towards, right? Like the unconditional love piece and the acceptance piece. Like to me, both of them allows you to stay neutral. And his neutral is different from the neutral I describe in my book, but it's kind of similar too, right? Where right, with unconditional love and acceptance, which is unconditional love is above reason and acceptance is below reason. I'm like, to me, my book, unconditional love and acceptance is where like the avatars who have been the influence of world religions like Buddhism, Christianity, even the Muslim religion, they were understanding what it means to be accepting and neutral about everything that you do and what people do to you, right? And realizing that you have to react somehow. And by not reacting, you are reacting. So you have to accept what is right now. And then from there, you can be unconditionally loving. And you can't, this is huge from his book. And we talk about this with Randy. No amount of reason, right? Like you talked about, like I cannot use reason to help you experience what I did through my meditation practices. Like none, no mathematical formulas are going to get you to finally say, so that's what happened to you. This is a personal internal journey. I can't use anything outside of myself to like help you see it. You just have to go in, tap into that knowledge. And then when you hear people talking about it, it dawns on you what they're saying because you know. And then you're also humble because you also know that there's so much you don't know. So,
right.
So, exactly. Yeah. So even though you know, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. There's a lot out there, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. And I think the same knowledge impacted me a lot. The whole Power Versus Force book and the concept of map of consciousness for many reasons. First, the part about the muscle testing itself, to me, was something amazing, that how your body actually knows if something is true or not, even if you're consciously not aware of if it's true or not. Just the fact that your muscles get stronger when you say something true shows how the body is tapped in like a field where the truth exists, I guess. And even if your conscious mind or your ego is not really aware of it. So that was the first thing that struck me from the book, because I started to do muscle testing myself, for myself, for my friends, for my wife, and it was working. I mean, it was working perfectly. I was able to predict things that weren't happening, haven't happened yet, and they all turned out to be the way I predicted them. Not because I'm smart or anything, just because, you know, the muscle testing thing was working. And then learning about the map of consciousness, there's an appeal to me when there's numbers, because I come from an engineering background, but I graduated computer science as well. So math and numbers is my thing. So when you put something on a scale, it just it resonates with me. But I also learned a lot, because there's a period of my life in my younger years where first I used to think that guilt was something spiritual. And it was only maybe like 10 years ago that I realized that guilt is not something. I mean, I don't want to say it's spiritual or not spiritual, but it's not helpful for spiritual growth, actually. But there was a big part of my life where I thought that guilt means that I feel bad about something I did. So that means I'm trying to get better. So it's a good thing. That's how I was looking at it at the time. And it was only like later in my life where I learned that, no, I shouldn't be in a state of guilt. And then the Dr. Hawkins work confirmed that as well, and showed, you know, how to function on much higher levels than that. And today I practice something called EFT, which is Emotional Freedom Techniques, which is it's also known as tapping. So you kind of tap with your fingers on parts of your body and you release stuck emotions and stuck limiting beliefs that you have. And every time I do that, my level of consciousness kind of ascends, because I'm letting go of old energy that isn't helping me anymore. And this is something I never shared on the podcast, or I never shared publicly before. But I love how all these things tie into each other. And that's also what you were saying. I mean, everybody has their own flavor. They're describing the same thing, but with a different flavor to it. And I like connecting the dots. I like reading. There's a lot of spiritual work and books and content that seem to be contradictory, but it's actually describing the same thing from different perspectives. They're just looking at it from another angle. And when you just look at everything like objectively, you start to understand how it all fits in together. And I think this is also why I like to have this podcast with so many different people from different backgrounds, because everyone gives me a different perspective on things. Anyway, I'm rambling now, so let's get back to it.
That's great.
Well, that's what happened.
That's great. You said, yeah. Mohammed, you said a lot of fascinating things there. And, you know, if I could chime on guilt, right? And if you look at Dr. David Hawkinson's map of consciousness, I believe guilt is above shame. And one thing that I've seen, or I recognize, or I remember, is like all these emotions, they're there for a reason. They're there to teach you something, to help you remember something. And somebody somewhere is benefiting from it. So if you think about the emotion of guilt being an expression of consciousness, it's an energy, it's an intelligence, it's a knowing that is also trying to know itself. And so guilt is always evolving. So if that energy of guilt, which is alive, right? Remember, everything is alive. If energy of guilt is able to interact with you in a manner that you identify with it, right? Then it's learning. It's learning how to show up for you so that you interact with it. Eventually, you may do something that causes you guilt, then learn from it, and then no longer do it. But then what guilt does is it learns how to show up in a new, different way. So now you're going to do something else where guilt is going to come again. And as you evolve that, and you may decide either to stop doing the thing, which then that level of guilt does not show up, or you just don't feel guilty about it anymore, which shows spiritual growth, which describes exactly what you're going through, right? As you describe. But guilt, again, it's an alive consciousness that's constantly evolving, just like you are. So when it learns that in interacting with Mohammed, this level of guilt is not going to cause him to identify me, this guilt is going to evolve. And so at every level of your evolution, there is, all of those levels are available for you to experience. So if you think, when you experience guilt, this sounds really crazy, you are helping guilt know itself better. And for that energy, that's why you're valuable to it. At the same time, if you're in shame and you shift up to guilt, we talk about this a lot on our podcast. If you're at a level of shame and you shift up to guilt, you're actually shifting up in energy. There is more. Okay, one thing to recognize is all those levels there's no absence of love in any of those levels. There's just more love when you go up, right? So if you go from shame to guilt, there's more love that you're experiencing for yourself and for others. So that's the benefit of guilt. And the biggest underlying sort of message is like there's just no way to not be providing benefit to consciousness in everything that you do and experience and how you respond. There's just no way that I cannot unsee. This has been my experience, regardless of what you're doing. And that is going to rub, it may rub you the wrong way if you're listening to this, but there's just nothing else because there's nothing outside of consciousness, right? It's, we're just it interacting in different forms, all benefiting it.
Very, very, I mean, it's very interesting. It's I think we can talk about this for hours, Roland. Seriously, very fascinating topic. I just want to ask you one more thing before we wrap up. And this is a question that we ask all the guests. If you had to recommend a book aside from the one you wrote, where you've already recommended that. So that one's been noted already. But if you could recommend something else that you've recently read or if you've read at some point of your life that had an impact on you as well, that you would recommend to the listeners, anything that comes up in the moment for you?
Yeah, there are many. I mean, just now we've talked about my book. We've talked about Power versus Force. I like to recommend two other very simple books. One is, if you're on the spiritual path, you've heard of this. It's called The Journey of Souls by Michael Newton. That's another fascinating book. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Dr. Michael Newton. Okay. The Journey of Souls is great. Another one, this one is like a hidden gem. Many people may not know about this book. Let me grab it here and show it to you. Sorry, I'm moving my screen. This one I would recommend. It's a very nice, easy read, and it's powerful. It's called Lessons of the 12 Archangels by Belinda Womack. Okay. I don't believe there's an audiobook version of this. I believe it's only paperback. They may have a Kindle version, like an electronic version, not audiobook, like a digital version. And I don't know, but this book is fascinating. I read this book way before my spiritual awakening.
Right.
And when I was going through my spiritual awakening, the knowledge from this book like showed up. It was confirming. It was, I remember when you read 12 Archangels? Yeah. That's what we're talking about. That's the message you're getting. And what I also like about this book, it's a very easy read. Like my book is dense. It's written at like a, you know, college level plus graduate level, grade level. This one is like sixth grade and he explains the same thing. And I wish I could write this simply. I'm getting better at that.
What's the name of the author again?
Belinda Womack.
Okay.
She's a fascinating lady. Her story is great. You find out about her. You can see she has some interviews on YouTube and everything, and she's got a website.
I will. Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna say something that might sound crazy, but and I will need to confirm this after the podcast. But I'm pretty sure that today, while I was going through my Instagram, or I think it might be the Reels section of the Conscious Convos account, so there's a lot of spiritual content that shows up there in the Reels. I'm pretty sure that the speaker came up, the author of this book came up, and I remember reading something, a message from an archangel somewhere. I need to go back and confirm that this is the same one exactly. But if it is, I mean, that's an amazing synchronicity right there. I'm pretty sure it is, because once I saw the cover, when you put the cover on the screen, I'm like, this looks familiar. I think I saw this 5 hours ago, but I need to double check.
Leave a comment at the bottom of your YouTube channel letting us know. That would be fascinating.
I'll let you know in a message as well. I just want to make sure. Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Well, Roland, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate that we did this really quickly. I mean, we messaged each other like 2-3 days ago. We found a spot. So really appreciate your flexibility and being on here today. It was super interesting. And I have a feeling we're going to do this again sometime.
Yeah, so do I. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. And for everybody else, hope you enjoyed it and see you in the next episode. Bye and take care.